Welcome to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro, powered by Beyond, where we dive heart first into all things events in the nonprofit world. I'm Amy Milne, your host and CEO of Beyond and the Nonprofit Event Society, where we believe that your events matter. You're not just hosting an event, you're inviting people to join you in changing the world. We're here to talk tricks of the trade and share tales from the trenches so you can produce epic events that inspire participants, raise more money, and change lives. Let's dive in. I am beyond words to welcome Erica Helphand, owner, managing partner, and COO at Op3, a world-class event production company based in LA. Erica is the ultimate good human and an extraordinary event producer, leader, and fundraiser. I am beyond grateful to have Erica as a friend and colleague in this crazy world of nonprofit events, and our conversation today is sure to spark new ideas and get you fired up about how we can continue to create change and opportunities for our fellow females in the nonprofit event industry. We absolutely get real today. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. I am super excited for this conversation. Before we even press record, we already had a half an hour conversation about how we were going to change the world. So hopefully we'll be able to bring all the best parts of that conversation and more to this for our listeners. But to start off, I know you super well, but our listeners may not. So let me know who you are, where you're from, and what you're all about.
I'm Erica Helphand. I am one of the managing partners and the COO of Op3 Events. I am a born and raised New Yorker, but I live in LA. Not sure when I'm going to stop saying that I'm from New York, but I live in LA.
I love it.
And I have been in events for about 20 years. Shortly after college, friends of mine were riding in the Boston New York AIDS ride, and I donated to them, and I came to cheer them into closing, and I was obsessed with everything that I saw, and I was not interested in riding a bike for 4 days from Boston to New York, but I thought, surely they need help for this. So I volunteered the next year. They quickly were like, please be a team leader. This girl's driving us crazy, I think. And by the following year, I was working for the event company that produced that event. So I've often wondered if my kind of skill set and passions would have eventually led me to events one way or another. So if I hadn't fallen into it that way, you know, if I hadn't found the ride, how would I have gotten here? Because it seems impossible to separate now.
Just to me, ever since I've met you, it's been in your DNA. Like you live it, you breathe it. We were just talking about stickers and like you are event sweat. You are you just embody it. And so you're a managing partner of Op3. What is Op3?
Op3 is an event production and peer-to-peer fundraising consulting agency. So what that effectively means is that we're working with nonprofits all over the country to strengthen their programs. And we try to tailor what we do to what each client needs. So for some folks, they're like, we have nothing. We need to build something from the ground up. For some, they're like, we need our development team to be able to do development. Can we just outsource logistics and have you call the fire marshal and permit the route and find us a new site and order the tents and tables and chairs and toilets and all of those glamorous things? Sometimes they've lost their entire development team and they need some support with fundraising strategy or with actual recruitment, coaching. Sometimes they haven't done much investment in their volunteer program and they need to rethink what that looks like, or they need to build one because they don't have one. So depending on their bench strength and what they're looking to do, that's how we partner with our clients so that they're getting what they need that hopefully complements their bench strength and is pain relieving for whatever they're going through.
Right. Which is often a lot and probably even more, as we know, coming out of the last couple of years in terms of what does that look like. So one of the things that you and I were chatting about, and I'd love to stop reference, like we're going to talk about it now, is reimagining the events. I think always we've probably, you and I have been in the industry a similar amount of time, and a lot of people have done things because they're working at such a pace. They've got so many things on their desk. The teams are who they are. And it's like, we just do things the way they've always been done. And, you know, reimagining an event always seemed to be like this massive undertaking, and it, you know, and so people just got scared and didn't do it. And I think as I've spoken to some people coming out of the pandemic, it's really important that people are really truly looking at their events and saying, like, what is this? Our customers experiencing more or expecting more? We're in a service hospitality-based space in the world right now, and our events are part of that. And so tell us, I know you and your team have been working on some extraordinary work in reimagining events and for different clients. So tell us a bit about that.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's two things. I think in the before times, it's a lot of what you were saying. People were nervous about it. It was copy paste. We don't want to change anything. This is the way we've done it. Or we were worried about cost. We were worried about you're never going to make everybody happy. So even if we add this great thing, someone else is going to be upset about the thing we took away so that we could afford this great thing that we thought everybody was going to love in our reimagination. And I think COVID coming along, a couple of things beyond just live events being the first to go and the last to come back.
That's a thing.
not a great time. A great time to be an event producer. Was reimagining for all, you know, for all of us. But I do think there was a huge reset because in the kind of in-between times when things were coming back a little bit and it was how much COVID safety and what are the regulations locally, which was just so, so different depending on where you were in the country and where you were in the world. I think there people gave a little bit more grace in terms of all of they wanted all the things originally, and then those things had to go away just from a safety perspective. And it helped us help them remember their why, right? Like, it wasn't about the food truck. It wasn't about the cool fundraising reward item. Although those things are cool and additive, it was, man, what I really missed was being in person with my team, was being in person with a huge group of people that might be totally different from me, but care about this one thing that I really care about. Or my friend dragged me to this thing and I didn't know anything about it. And damn, this is amazing. Look how many great people there are. Who give a damn, you know? Right. Like I think that kind of can't be understated as a positive, you know?
For sure.
So I think some of the reinvention or the reimagination was necessity because it was like, how can we give people that feeling without the thing 47 people are touching?
Right. And we're not blowing out any candles.
Or without a shipping container worth of hand sanitizer. You know, like it was bananas. It's just been a bonkers few years. But I think it helped people get clear about that. What are the things that are important? And sometimes when we're taking client partners through these reimagination exercises, it's hard to get them to close the laptop, put down the phone, get out of your inbox. But if we don't set the right goals and guideposts, how do we get there? You know, and we need those because we have to keep coming back to them throughout the process. It's a messy process, but we have to keep coming back to those guides, you know, guideposts and goals so that we know, like, does this service what we're trying to do? Or is this just a fun, cool thing? I feel like we say to people all the time, like, you don't want the ice bucket challenge. You want your ice bucket challenge.
Right.
So if you're studying other events or you're envying another event's success while wishing them well, I hope.
Yeah.
what you should be looking at is how did they get there? What's the process? Like, what is that engaging with or connecting with around their mission that you could do? Like, not because you want to do the similar thing. Like, how are you going to engage your constituents or new constituents? What are the things that are important to them? And if you don't know, there's a bunch more work to do, then that's okay.
Right.
I think that's scary for people to say, we're not sure. Or they have a lot of canned answers that come from Marcom. But is that really what's important to your folks? And are you realizing the same thing maybe isn't important to your longtime team captain, as is to your first time walker, runner, rider, climber, mudder, you know, whatever your kind of activity is. So, and who is your audience made up of, right? Like, so this is a constant struggle in non-competitive events like we do, right? Are we here for the first 50 participants, the last 50 participants, or the 2,000 in the middle. So you want to be all things to all people, but realistically, like, you need to figure out who you're servicing. And a lot of times for nonprofits, that's going to come down to who are your top fundraisers. It's, and that follows through with everything, not just reimagining event experience. I mean, that is a little bit of like recruitment and fundraising coaching 101.
Right.
It's so much easier to look at this huge pool of $0 fundraisers and say, but if we could just get all of them to raise 20 bucks, but you won't. So stop wasting your time and money. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I had this conversation.
80% of your money is coming from the top 10 or 20% of people. Like, that's who needs your time and attention and resources, because that's who's generating the revenue for you. So like, that is a real hard pill to swallow for people, but that's the nice thing about, that's the science part of the art and the science, right? The data doesn't lie. So
exactly. And it sounds like when you're talking about finding the why, it's and engaging people, this is well before they park their car to come to opening ceremonies. Like, this is really looking at, as you said, like, looking at your people and what is your why, because you have to, you don't engage someone with a porta potty and a burger and to your point, a food truck. You engage someone with what you're doing. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, or at least in my opinion, and you may have a different one or you may agree, but it doesn't necessarily have to be 1,000 mission stories, because it's also, the mission absolutely matters. And I'm not saying that, but you also need to understand, to your point, who that top 20% is that is coming to your event and showing up and raising the money for you. They care about the mission, but what else do they care about? Like, that's something that we in our agency always like to look at, is like, what else? Like, what about them? Like, it's enough about us, but what about them? You know, like, how, what do they like, and how can we take what they like and add that to that reimagination of that experience?
Or something that they haven't even asked for, right? Like, it can be a ton of micro experiences. It can be all of these little tiny things, these other little surprise and delights. And I'm glad you brought up parking, because it's again, something that is like the tacked on add on that people forget about. And instead, you should be thinking of it as the welcome mat and the kiss goodnight.
Yeah.
100%. What's the first and last experience you want people to have with your event? I think you're going to think about parking in a very different way if you think of it that way. So
totally agree. What are some of those micro moments that you speak of? Like, what are some of those ones that you've infused into the events that have, you know, had big impact? Parking is number one. You're like, bang on. It's one of my things. It's like, you need, you know, just even from people knowing where it is and telling them 6,000 times in an email, absolutely making sure your volunteers know, making sure the signage is there, making sure there's people to know where they go to park. Because to your point, like, it's the first and last experience.
Yeah.
And so,
and knowing that they don't read and they don't look, and like, right, you're sort of, people are going to be their own worst enemy, and you're going to just do your best to work around them in spite of themselves. But
totally,
I think when we're looking at an event, and you and I talked about this briefly before, but I'm not even saying this is an endurance event that's days long and tons and tons of miles or a bazillion routes or that kind of thing. This can even be every one day, 5K or shorter, non-competitive. Totally. Like, maybe it's a mile loop around the park with a family fun festival. There are still fun things that you can do. People are still getting out of bed and packing up their kids or their dogs or themselves or all of the above and coming to see you on a random Saturday morning or Sunday morning or Thursday night or whatever it is. Like, what they're doing that out of all the other things that they could be doing. Like, make it worth their while, right? Make sure they know that you appreciate them being there. So I think when we're trying to get to those micro experiences, we'll bucket stuff out to like the welcome, bringing mission to life. Where's the fun? What should the ceremony be? Even if the route is a teeny tiny route, like, is there something fun that you can do on the route?
Right. Well, even your signage, like, so many people wayfinding, like, I always find signage can be fun. Like, it needs to tell people where to go, but you can have mission moments there. You can have like way to goes. You can, like, it doesn't always have to be so technical.
And it can be cheeky too. I mean, one of my favorite parking signs of all time, I think it was a Spartan race that was like, if you think this is bad, wait till you get to whatever the name of some obstacle was. So
oh my God,
it was
right,
like,
that.
Hey, everybody hates parking and parking's a pain in the butt, right? Like, it's just kind of poking fun at it, but it is like a human moment to connect with someone.
Right. And probably going to be photographed.
Right.
And it's probably going to be photographed because we're like, oh my God, it's like, I did an event, a bike ride event with a friend of ours up here this past year. And one of the signs that he said was that went past, like the turnaround was, you've gone too far. Like, I just think that's epic. Like you missed the turn, buddy.
It's like route marking, particularly on bike rides. The rule of route marking is like, tell them what you're going to, it's sort of like an essay, right? Tell them what you're going to tell them what you told them. So you need like arrow for the turn coming up, arrow at the turn, and reassurance arrow that you did it right for the people that have a bad sense of direction. Like, that's who you need to be marking the route for. Exactly. Like Joe Yamahoo, who's following his Strava anyway and isn't going to pay attention to any route cues or things you do, is choosing his own adventure. All you can do is your best for him. But the person who's nervous, like, that's who you, like, I think that sometimes is like thinking about those common denominator things. Like, erring on the side of more detail or more information when it's not cumbersome or overwhelming, right?
And then having fun, like you just said, like that was just like to see fun things like that. Those are those micro moments that are memorable. That's like something you're not expecting to see. And then it's personable to that, whether it's to the cause or to the actual event, right? And it's like you mentioned, you know, packing up the family and dogs. Well, if you're going to have dogs, make sure there's dog bowls for water because they don't drink water bottles. Or kids have the proper size t-shirts. Like if you're going to have kids on your event, like all those things are those little things that make a massive difference in someone's experience.
The first half marathon I ever ran, they ran out of medals.
Ran? Like you ran it or you ran it?
Oh, like I ran it with my two little feet. Nice. Very slow. Not quickly, but that's slow mileage is better than no mileage. So
absolutely.
And I, of course, I didn't do it for the medal. Like, that's not why I was doing it at all. Right. It was a big, like, it was a big accomplishment for me as a lifelong, not sporty kid. And it was, you know, that was just a bummer. Like, whatever. It was no big deal. And they mailed it to you later.
You remember it. Like, but you remember it.
Yeah. I mean, it's whatever, in a shoebox somewhere in a closet. But like, hey, you run out of medals. Like, you know how many people are coming? Come on. Like, that just felt like, it just felt like a, I don't, that's what frustrates me. Like, sometimes you can't control stuff, but like the dumb misses where it's like, you just didn't pay attention. Like, you, you had the information for this to not be an issue. Like, that's what bugs me. Right. And so that definitely drives me bananas. If we like, I'm always looking for that. And people are like, yes, we did double check that. But I'm like, that's why I drive you guys bananas with this, because I just, you never want to miss the thing that you had the information not to miss, you know?
Right. Like we've said, you know, like I'm happy to run out of something on an event if it's because it was, you could register that day of and all of a sudden 1,000 people decided to come out. And I think that, and so you can't count for that, which is why I think there's some safeguards we can put in place, like registration fees and, you know, planning
for
that.
Or it's something super popular that you didn't think was going to be popular.
Like, totally.
I'm not excited about disappointing people, but that does feel like a good problem to have. Like, cool. This was a test that was a raging success, I'd say, you know? Yeah. So
totally. So one of the things that you talk about as well when it comes to events is you can't, you know, we can't do what we do without our volunteers and our crew members. And crew members are something that you and I are familiar with and as a name, and not everybody calls them crew, and crew and volunteers can be seen as the same thing. But how do you feel about crew and volunteers? I've spoken to so many people over the years, and we often get people like encouraging people to, you know, ask their volunteers or their crew members to fundraise because people just don't think that they should ask them. And so I know you have an opinion on crew and volunteers, and I think it's really important to share with our listeners. So give it to me.
I have lots of opinions about crew and volunteers.
Well, let's get real.
I mean, my first job in events was as a crew director. So I was all crew all the time for a long, long time. Crew and volunteers are still some of my favorite participants. And I will go to my grave arguing with anyone that they are participants and not a separate entity. They are just as much participants as walkers, runners, riders, climbers, mudders, whatever your thing is. And I think there is a critical miss in organizations not investing in their volunteers, be it, I think they think they're doing a good job because sometimes of because some of the appreciation, but I think a lot of them miss the mark. And I think beyond the appreciation, be it the special patch, jacket, t-shirt, hat, whatever it is, like wall in your office, if you still have an office that has like a volunteer spotlight or spotlights on social, a little bit for me at the core of that is not resourcing your staff appropriately. So mm-hmm. do you have a dedicated volunteer coordinator or volunteer manager? Or is it the hot potato thing that the whole development team is like, not it. And poor Jen, right. who's the one who just got hired 8 weeks out, isn't as busy as everyone else. So volunteers land on her head and she's like, yeah. but I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, here, you're just going to, you know, you're going to post these three things and, you know, you're going to pick up the internet and shake it till some volunteers fall out. And then people wonder why their program is struggling or why it suffers and why things aren't running smoothly on event. Because I think they're, as much as a lot of organizations talk the talk about volunteer appreciation, they don't walk the walk. So they don't invest in it. They don't care about it. It's not that they don't care about it. They're already under-resourced and overburdened. Mm-hmm. And so it comes a little later in the game. That's not something that you can work on months and months in advance. And they don't look at that cultivation as revenue generating, which I think is a mistake. I mean, mm-hmm. I have been a crew member and volunteer who has fundraised or fundraises. Mm-hmm. I would argue, whether it's a one-day event or an endurance event, that they have just as much opportunity to be kind of a, you know, to have a lifetime value proposition that is really high. And some people are volunteering not because they don't want to walk or ride or run or swim or mud or whatever, but because they like helping. My mom, mm-hmm. who's walked a ton of events that we've produced, said to me after her first one, she's like, you know, I think you're either a walker or your crew, and you just have always been crew, always, as long as I've known you, which is always.
Yeah, she kind of was. She was there.
And
when
I was like, you're right. And so to me, when I crewed those high fundraising minimum events, to me, I was like, well, I don't have to spend all this time training. And so the event is going to be really hard for me because it's hard work. But mm-hmm. why would I not raise the same amount that a rider or walker or whatever is raising? Yeah. Like, that's something I can do. And I know I'm not every volunteer or crew member, but of course.
You're the 20%. Like, if they're not paying attention, yeah. 20%.
I think people are I just think we as an industry or like organizationally, I think there's a lot of missed opportunities around volunteers because it ends up being this afterthought or this taken for granted or this, I don't know, just they don't want to say they see them as free labor. But there is a little bit of behavior that treats them that way.
Right.
And I don't like that. And I think a ton of programs, just like a ton of organizations and the entire sector, is really struggling with staffing right now. Mm-hmm. Volunteers are the same. We're getting more requests than ever to do volunteer recruitment and management. Right. And I'll tell you what, when we do, the results are a lot better than when they do it themselves.
Right. Yeah, we're in similar situation up here too. We're in Canada. You're in the States, obviously, or maybe not obviously to everybody, but it's the
now you know.
We're on both sides of the border. I'm where it's sunny, and Erica's where it's you're where it's sunny and warm, and I'm where it's winter and cold. But I think it's cyclical partly in our industry that if you're not revenue generating at first, then you're not the top priority. And I think sometimes that even somewhat segues into some of the conversations we've had over the years. And even a big reason why I started this podcast to talk to people is that even us in the event space, the event producers that are in-house and out-of-house in the nonprofit, we're not seen the same way as a major gift officer or a monthly we're not seen the same way. We know that by virtue of what we see in terms of the extracurricular that's out there for us. There's not a lot of learning ops for us because we're just not recognized, which means there are hundreds of people inside nonprofit organizations around the world right now that feel less than.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that when I was in-house and I worked at some of the largest, we weren't necessarily top of mind. I was lucky to work for some leaders who absolutely respected the value of events, but I've also worked for people who didn't. And I've now worked with some organizations that don't see it because we're not bringing in the $1 million gifts. But I think it's a massive miss because we actually are. We're just doing it differently.
And even if we're not, I don't, like, the hard thing to quantify is the experiential and the cultivation that you're doing as part of that, right? Like, who's mm-hmm. part of this now because it's fun and they wanted to go to a pajama party and they would never go to some other stuffy right. luncheon or something. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, yep. I read something so, I'm gonna butcher it a little bit, but I'm paraphrasing, but I read something so interesting and I feel like I keep applying it to different areas of disparity that I experience in a bunch of different ways. Haley Rosen, who is the founder and CEO of Just Women's Sports, which she started after she retired from playing pro soccer. She said recently that the biggest double standard she's talking about in sports, the biggest double standard in sports isn't equal pay, it's potential versus production. Ooh. So she cited all these examples of men's things that struggle, like soccer, like XFL, like things that can go bankrupt and reboot endlessly. But for women's sports are regularly dismissed because they haven't hit breakaway profitability. So you've got one half of the room getting to sell their visions of the future, and the other half is only allowed today's receipts. And that just blew my mind because
I think
that applies to a lot of things here, but it feels spot on to what you're talking about in terms of that disparity.
Yeah, huge, huge. And then in terms of that, something else that you're super passionate about, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, is you are a massive advocate and have, you know, brought a lot of us to the table on this, and we want to continue to support this for you and for ourselves, is women in fundraising and salary gaps and recognition. You started something a few years back that, you know, continues to grow as time allows, called Elementary. So tell me a little bit about that, because that's something that I think is vitally important as we move forward.
Well, you were there. It's embarrassing how long it took me to get there.
It's not embarrassing. Good things take time.
Okay. I mean, we were at a women's leadership conference in New York. Yep. There were three or four of us. We were like chatting through our day, and I am like on my soapbox, entirely unnecessary with this crowd, totally impassioned, like preaching wildly to the choir about the disgraceful state of the gender wage and leadership gap in the nonprofit sector.
Yep.
And I'm going on and on and on about how terrible it is and how someone should do something. And you all just patiently waited for me to run out of steam. And finally get like, wait, me, I'm someone, I'm a woman. Wait, when I have a woman-owned business. Wait, I work with tons of nonprofits. I should do something. And I literally remember all of you just kind of smirking at me like, there it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she, like, got there. That's what mattered.
we knew she would get there. Yeah. I mean, and Elementary is like, needs to not be a hobby. It needs to be, someone needs to be leading it. And that's just hasn't been an opportunity, especially the last few years of the COVID times, just trying to keep our team intact and mm-hmm. keep our business running. But really, it's just an organization dedicated to advancing gender equity and nonprofit, mm-hmm. right? Our first working session was back in 2018, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just a working session with like 30 badass women. The next year, it became a quote unquote official part of the conference mm-hmm. after being dismissed by the organizer the year before.
True story.
Validating on a number of fronts. But people were excited about it, which is how it got to be an official part. And I think even men that I've worked with for 20 years that I said, hey, will you come to this? And they were like, but it's a women's thing. And I was like, no, we mm-hmm. need you. Like, this is the thing. Yeah. And if you don't know, this is both of two of the three of them that I talked to after, like, had the same kind of staggering response at some of the like commonality of what they were hearing in the room that were things that just never occurred to them.
It was a very powerful session. It was extraordinary. And even some of the conversation, because that was New Orleans, I believe, that we were at, right? It was that conference, I think. I remember having conversations over French 75s. And so I think that's after the session.
Seems like NOLA.
Sounds like it. And I think, you know, we just even remembering some of the conversations, like, all I would say is not to, you know, it started, it's not over. The conversation was started, and that's the biggest part of it. and maybe this is a bit more of it. The more we see each other in person, we're going to see each other in a couple of weeks, and we're going to be able to gather the troops again, because it's not something that you need to take on alone. You know, we've been your champions alongside you since we watched you come to it in New York.
I do get the odd email or text or IM that's like, I used X, Y, or Z worksheet, or this thing that you said really worked, and I did get the raise. Or
yeah, that was huge.
You know, I was shaking in my boots, but I brought this thing up, or you know, whatever it is. So I think little by little we do chip away little by little. And even, I mean, one of the other I would say positives of the COVID times was that because events were gone, we were frantically trying to do other things. It felt like we were working 80% harder for 50% as much money. But
true story again.
We finally had time to get certified as a women-owned small business.
Oh, yeah.
And so that, like, it, for us, because we're not a brick and mortar, like, it's, again, it's that weird, instead of being, we talked about this before, like, we're not a CRM. We're not selling a software solution for nonprofits. Oh. Like, the way that you and I and some others service nonprofit is not the typical agency or consultant relationship, but instead of sort of being seen as unicorns, I feel like we're a little bit seen as lepers sometimes.
True story.
So anyway, there are not a ton of benefits that necessarily being officially certified gets us, but one of them is you can use this, you know, their little women-owned logo, you know, on your website, on your things. Yeah. And I put it on the sleeve of our staff shirt, not for any reason except that I was really proud of us and like not trying to make a big deal about it or whatever. And man, the amount of conversations it generated was staggering. And even in hiring, when I said, like, so here's the blah, blah, blah before our conversation, maybe take a look at our website, see if there's anything that gives you pause or anything that you're super excited about. And when I brought that up in like interviews or screenings or things like that, almost every single person brought up the fact that we were a women-owned company. And so Colleen and I weren't leading with that necessarily, but I think it made us realize like, oh man, people want that and maybe we should be.
Right. Yeah, it's important. And it was, and really it takes you back to why like that was important to you to be seen as a woman and to be recognized as a woman in business. And as you know, there's so many of us in the nonprofit space, we likely outnumber our counterpart. And to your point, you know, I'll never forget the three men that were in the session at the conference, and they were like, how are we a part of the change? It's not us against them or them against us if we want to actually make change.
Right. We were like, we need you because you are actually what makes the change.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And I'm a mom of two boys. And so like, as a mom, as a woman raising that next generation, I want to encourage them to be who they are, better educated and smarter about who I am and who the other women are around them. I don't want them to be shamed and like gotten rid of because they're white dudes. I want them to be a part of the solution.
Yeah, and be better white dudes.
Right? Totally. And support us, you know, us ladies. This has been amazing. And I feel like you and I can talk forever. I do have one more question for you. What are the 1 to 3 tools that you have in your toolbox that you can't live without?
You mean besides like,
however you want to interpret that.
You don't want like headlamp. You want like
Whatever. It could be however you decide. Want, like, it could be a headlamp to this.
Headlamp, good knife, carabiner. You're not looking for headlamp, carabiner. You're looking for like, I don't know. How do you?
No, all of it. I want to know.
Combat the imposter syndrome or that kind of thing.
Never comes to mind.
Yeah, all the things you think you need to know, you don't, or you don't need to know them till you need to know them. And if you don't know them, you have some smart friends who can help you find them out, or you also have the magical Google machine, and that will also tell you a ton of things. So I think, women tend to be their own worst enemies in terms of like not applying for jobs unless you're 100% qualified, which is like, then you're going to have mastery of that job in 2 seconds and you should always go for the stretch, even though that doesn't feel comfortable. But it's like, it's spotting it to be able to fight it. So you also have to find this is again, like, you don't want the ice bucket challenge. You want your ice bucket challenge. You need to find the things that work for you. So is that pre-meeting power stance, the song that hypes you up, lucky socks. I have a bracelet that says make Lizzo proud.
Nice. And you have and a headlamp. And you have a headlamp and a good knife and a carabiner.
And I also have lucky socks. So sometimes you just gotta double
like
it up
that,
and that
yeah, helps. I was like, that came somewhere for sure. What do your lucky socks look like?
They have ninjas on them. They're starting to get worn out, so I'm on the hunt for some new lucky socks, actually. I would say stop apologizing or using 1,000 exclamation points to make your emails friendlier. Be aware of using qualifying language, like just actually, maybe I'm wrong. You're not. Just stop doing it. There are Chrome plugins that can check your emails for those words. Like literally, there are physical tools to help you do this. And I think some of the sneakiest is if you hear in your head, who am I to do that? Or who am I to say this? Just don't listen.
Yep. You're in charge.
You know, sometimes you just need a 2 seconds of fake bravery. You just get it out and the world doesn't end and it helps it be a little bit easier the next time. So,
and the world needs you.
We need you. We need you.
We sure do. Erica, I have the biggest, like, I adore you so much. You, your team, everybody. I've learned so much from you, not only in this just past half hour, but over the years that we've known each other. I am grateful for your friendship and your guidance and your leadership in this industry. And I am beyond grateful that you chose to invest your time with us today. I know that everybody will benefit from this conversation. So I can't wait to see you in real life in a couple of weeks.
Me too.
I can't wait to hug you for real. I get to see you. But if other people are looking to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Erica, E-R-I-C-A at op3.com. It's the letter O, the letter P-3.com. Or if you just need an easier to remember, you can get to our website at thoseeventgirls.
Love it.
.com.org or .net. Those event girls.
Love it.
Vanity URLs kept our sanity during the pandemic sometimes.
So
and
fun.
For some reason, that one stuck. So
I love it. I'm sure there will be a sticker, or maybe I'm hoping for a sticker and maybe a t-shirt when I see you in a couple of weeks.
I can hook you up. I know a girl.
We'll make sure that we tag that in our show notes as well. But Erica, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Ames.
Thanks so much for listening and doing good in the world. We see you. We can't wait for you to join us next time when we hear from another good human who will share their story, along with tips and tricks that will help you execute extraordinary events that are sure to have a lasting impact on your participants, beneficiaries, donors, and colleagues. Make sure you follow Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review the show so other nonprofit event pros just like you can find our podcast so they too can create events that matter. Tune in next week to laugh, cry, and cheer with us on another episode of Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro. See you soon. Hey, good human. Are you hitting roadblocks with your events and marketing and need a bit of help to take it to the next level? We've got you. Sign up for our monthly hot seat coaching, where we will answer your questions live on the podcast. That's right. You'll get to join me, Amy Milne, and my colleague, Lisa Cohen, right here on Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast. And we will share our expertise to help you with your specific questions. Sound good? Great. Fill out the quick form by following the link in the show notes, and we'll take it from there. We're stoked to have you on the podcast, good human listener, to guide you through your current challenges. Keep it real.